Hopefully, your life is as enjoyable as you make it out to be on social media.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd, the lead fantasy basketball analyst over at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me on Twitter at redrock_Beeble. We're going to talk about all five games from Thursday and then preview a nine-game Friday to help set your DFS lineups. So
let's get to it.
Let's get to it indeed, Michael Bolton. No mucking around. We'll get stuck straight into it. The monstrous line of the night goes to DeMar DeRozan of the Toronto Raptors. DeRozan had 45 points and he hit a career-high 6 triples. You don't often get 3-pointers from DeMar, but you got them here. 5 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 steals and a block. 13 of 21 from the field and 13 of 15 from the free throw line. DeRozan is the 33rd ranked player this season, improving on his 44th rank of last year, and is actually the 20th ranked player over the last 2 weeks, averaging 29, 4, and 5.5. Got those assist numbers up over... He was at 3.9 last season. He's at 5 assists this year, so that's a real added emphasis. He said he was going to emphasize it. They were going to get more ball movement happening, and it's definitely happening with DeRozan. He's also hitting over double the amount of threes. He's at 0.9 threes per game this year. He was at 0.4 last year, and over those last 2 weeks, he's at 1.3 triples, and he's hitting them in that time frame at 44%. Now, for the season, he's only at 32, so we expect a level of regression, especially he was a 27% three-point shooter last year. But he said he was working on his threes. He said he was going to do more ball movement, and both of those things have come true. This guy's a really hard worker. He gets to the line fantastically, one of the best free throw percentage contributors in the league, and his free throw percentage hasn't been as high as it has been in the past, but still getting there 8.2 times per game. If he gets that 81% up to the 84, 85 that he's been the last couple of seasons, he's going to see his rank rise even further. He's been a really great value and a guy who often does get underrated in fantasy, although this season I thought he was a little bit too high in his ADP, which I think was in the 20s somewhere. And look, over the last 2 weeks, he's definitely living up to that with those increased threes and percentages, which I think will come back down. But he has been great for the Raptors, and they're quietly putting together a considerable run of victories. The Toronto Raptors. The waiver wire line of the night goes to Denzel the Hammer Valentine of the Chicago Bulls. 18-5-4 for the Hammer. 4 triples, 1 steal and 1 block, and 7 of 10 from the field. That's 2 strong games in a row from the Hammer. 29 minutes with 16-10-5 in the last game, and then 36 minutes in this game against the Cavs. It looked like he'd fallen out of favor because the two previous games he was at 22 and 18 minutes. And he thought, okay, David Nwab is taking some of his playing time. Justin Holiday's still getting his. And then Zach Levine's going to return at some point next month. But over the last couple, Valentine has looked more assured. Now, maybe he's getting the extra playing time because he's hitting his shots. In fact, in those last two games, he's 13 of 19 from the field. And he's hit 7 of his 11 threes. So obviously that is helping him get the extra playing time. But in saying that, the game before where he played only 22 minutes, he was 5 of 6 from the field. So that's 3 strong shooting games in a row from the Hammer. He's currently a top 150 player barely in only 29 minutes per game, averaging almost 10, 5, and 3 with almost 2 threes a game and 0.7 steals. But the shooting percentages at 41 and 69.
Giggity!
Are not ideal. 41% from 3 is obviously really good, especially when you're taking as many attempts as what the Hammer is. Is he a guy to own in 10-team leagues? Probably not. Is he a 12-team league guy? I don't have any issue really taking a flyer on that. It's going to be hard for him to maintain 30-plus minutes with Holiday, with Nwaba, and then with Levine, and with Hoiberg's seeming uncertainty is in terms of what he wants to do with that rotation, whether it is going to be Valentine that plays those minutes. And I think he wants it to be Valentine. We just got to have some level of consistency in the playing time. And that's not something that's necessarily going to come, given that he does have his struggles with shooting the ball, and that's going to limit what he can do. Now, I said he's at 41% from the field. That's because over the last 8 games, he's shooting 50%. Before that, he was shooting fairly horribly. And yeah, some sort of level of regression could potentially be coming for the Hammer here. So be aware of that. But his ability to rebound, to get some steals, and to get some assists does make him a fantasy asset. And I would much rather have him over Nwaba. And I'd probably rather have him over Justin Holiday, as I've mentioned many times before. But again, the uncertainty with what Hoiberg does makes it likely that whichever one of those wings that you add is not going to be a permanent fixture on your roster. The young gun of the night We go to Philadelphia, and it's not Benny Simmons. It is Dario Saric. 18, 10, and 9 for Saric. Just missed the triple-double, but he had 1-3, 2 steals, and 2 blocks. He's probably more disappointed that he missed the Richie Beno, to be honest, than the triple-double. 7 of 10 from the field and 3 of 3 from the line. Over the last month, he has been a top 50 player, playing 34 minutes a night, 16, 8.5, and 3.5. Of course, he is a must-own guy at the moment. It is going to be interesting to see exactly what happens to Saric once Markel Fultz returns, because you know, Fultz was getting 20, 25 minutes or so off the bench, and when Fultz went down, when he was out, that enabled Saric to start playing more, and then Saric moved into that starting lineup. So will he be able to maintain the 34 minutes per game he's played over the last month? That's a little bit dicey. He's averaging 16, 8.5, and 3.5, as I said, in this last month. The lack of defensive stats makes him somewhat of a worry, and when Fultz returns, does that take the ball out of Saric's hands a little bit more? Because, again, a lot of his value has come from these assists, and over the last 2 weeks, he's at 4.3 per game, which is obviously really, really good. I didn't think that he'd be able to maintain this level of production this season, given the additions in Philadelphia. I also didn't think they'd be playing him 34 minutes a night alongside Simmons and Embiid, but that has worked out really well for Philadelphia and for Saric. But I do fear there is maybe somewhat of a dip coming once Fultz eventually returns, if Fultz eventually returns. Nah, Fultz will be back, I just don't exactly know when. And that's going to be interesting to see how they try and integrate Markel back and how that does impact Dario, because he's going to be the guy most likely out of those starting players. You've got Simmons, Redick, Covington, and Embiid. Saric is the guy who's going to lose minutes out of that quintet rather than any of those other players. The dud of the night. I tell a man's not hot. It was just horrendous from Kristaps. 0 of 11 from the field, 1 point. In fact, he took 2 free throws and only hit one of them, so that was his point. 5 rebounds, 1 assist, no other stats, no steals, no blocks. He only played 21 minutes, I believe it was, 23 minutes. Just an absolutely horrendous, horrendous performance as he returned from the knee. Now, he said it was nothing to do with the knee, why he played so poorly. Shots just weren't going in, and the minutes were nothing to do with the knee either. I think it's just one of those games where you go, man, look, what can we do? Like, this is just it happens, and he'll be fine as we move forward. Nothing to really panic about there, but in saying that, he's the 18th ranked player for the season, but over the last month, he's down to 50th. His shooting percentages have dropped way off at 42 and 36% over the last month, when he was a guy that was 46 or 47 from the field and over 40% from three. So those numbers have started to come down and started to get back closer to numbers that we thought he might put up this season, given the increased offensive responsibility. So it is something to monitor, and whether he can remain a top 20 player for the rest of this season, I guess it's still up for an element of debate. But I wouldn't be reading too much into this performance, and that's not going to be informing our thoughts on Porzingis as we move forward. Just a real stinker from him, and nothing much to be overly worried about. And as I said, there were 5 games on Thursday. We're going to get into those now, talk about all those details from those games, and then we're going to later on, after the break in the show, head back and talk about Friday and the 9-game DFS slate. So let's get into these games from Thursday now. All right, let's have a look at the at these games, bring up the box scores for you guys who are watching the video on the screen. The first game is the Chicago Bulls and the Cleveland Cavaliers. The Bulls, they couldn't keep the win streak going, but they still played the Cavs really close. This is an interesting game in this one with the Montenegrin Alpha, Nikola Mirotic, only playing 25 minutes again, 15 and 5 with 3 triples, and this is the worry that I had with him. Now, he was putting up these huge, huge numbers when Lauri Markkanen was out, but the fact that he's only going to be sort of limited to this 25-minute role, it seems that will be the case as we move forward. Now, he's not a guy to drop by any stretch, because he can still have, in 26 minutes a night, he can still be a top 100 sort of a player. But the numbers he was putting up before are an unrealistic expectation of what, the unrealistic expectation for us to have for him for the rest of the season. As for Markkanen, he was great, 25 points in 30 minutes. We thought maybe a bit of a dip was coming in Markkanen's game, but back to 30 minutes. So that's, I think 30 rather than 31, 32 is a more realistic expectation for Markkanen as we move forward. But 25, 2 and 2 for him on high efficiency. The problem with him overall for fantasy for this season and for deeper leagues is his lack of defensive numbers. But the scoring obviously really good in this one. And Punch Bob Shiploke, Bob Portis, only 14 minutes. That's two games in a row of under 15 minutes for Bob, 6-3. So with Markkanen firing, with Mirotić playing his minutes, there's just not enough playing time for Punch Bob. He's the fourth big on this team. Robin Lopez back to 27 minutes here, 14-3-3. So there's no 12-team value in Punch Bob, and there's marginal 14-team league value. As for Nwaba, 16 minutes for him, 2-3-2. Wasn't a standard league guy, not one now. Chrissy Dunn, really, really good stuff from him. He had 10 first half assists and ended with 10 points, 5 rebounds and 14 assists and continues to be impressive in stretches. The turnovers are still a problem for his actual on-court play, but you know, I don't care about them in fantasy whatsoever. But he has been really, really impressive for the Bulls majority of the time. Onto the Cavs.
LeBron James.
He was good. 34, 6 and 9, 3 steals and 2 triples. While Kevin Love, there was still no Ty Lue in this game. Lue was sick. But we still get limited Kevin Love. 27-7 in 4 triples, 60% shooting. That's awesome from Kevin Love. Like, really, really good. True shooting of 79%, but 29 minutes in a 3-point game is bullshit. Like, it's just way too low for me. And people are saying to me, there was a comment on the Basketball Monster, you know, forums today or on the player comments about Kevin Love saying, yeah, Josh, you referenced in the podcast that he's going to probably have a dip when Isaiah Thomas returns. Why is that? He was able to put up similar numbers when Kyrie was there. And I said, that is true. The numbers he's putting up this season are very similar to the numbers he put up last season with Kyrie. The problem is he's putting up those same numbers without Kyrie. So we're now going to add another player into the mix. So to me, it's likely he's going to dip. They're giving extra usage to Dwayne Wade, which, you know, Wade had a usage of 33% in this game, Love just 29, which is just a horrible use of resources. And the fact that he's only getting 29 minutes in these close games is a worry to me. So I do think that there is going to be a dip coming with Kevin Love, because it's not like Thomas is going to come in and just not change anything and not going to take any shots. Someone's going to cop it. And given the way they're using Love at the moment, you'd have to think that it's going to be him that is going to lose some of those offensive touches. As for Wade, really good defensive night, 3 steals and 2 blocks with 10 points and 4 assists. That's numbers that are great for streaming. So it would have been an awesome stream on a Thursday. Not a must-own guy, though, while Kyle Korver did what he does, 4 triples for 15 points in 25 minutes. But of course, we can't rely upon him as a must-own. With the plumber J.R. Smith out with knee soreness, they started Channing Frye. He played 15 minutes and he won't play on most nights when Smith is back, as Tristan Thompson has taken over that backup center role. Jay Crowder played 29 minutes and did just nothing. He has been, I don't know if him in Boston was just all smoke and mirrors. I don't know what it is, but he's just not good anymore. The Raptors, Kyle Lowry, 23-9-4, 3 steals, strong game from him. But I want to focus on DeLon Wright, back-to-back, just returning from shoulder injury, 28 minutes, 12-4-4. DeLon was putting up really good numbers before his shoulder injury and had some 12-team value there. Now, I'm not saying that you run and grab him in 12s. I'd add him in 14-team leagues, but the fact that he played 28 minutes is going to pretty much, you know, assign Normie Powell to the scrap heap, and it could have an impact on the Jedi OG Anunoby, who only played 21 minutes here. DeLon is really, really good at the moment, and he can be a useful steal streamer and assist streamer. If he's getting 28 minutes as early as he's back here, when Dwayne Casey said he's on a minutes limit on a back-to-back, that's a really positive sign. It's obviously going to affect Freddie Van Vliet as well. Jonas Valanciunas, 2 games of under 16 minutes in a row. 16 minutes here again, 15-43. 2 points and 5 rebounds. Last game said, oh, it was a blowout. He had foul trouble. This one wasn't. It was a comeback winner, and that's, you know, part of that's why he was on the bench, because they were coming back with a different lineup. But it's real tough to rely upon him. We know that he can put up numbers in the big minutes, but we just have no confidence that those minutes are going to be there. So if you're in a 10-team league, I don't think you should be holding Valanciunas. In a 12, it really depends on who you'd be looking to add. Jakob Poeltl had 2 steals and 2 blocks with 8 points and 6 rebounds, and he's more of a deeper league sort of guy, while Ibaka played 34 minutes on a back-to-back. So obviously his knee's not too much of a problem. 12-8, not his best night, but he had been putting up some really good ones. Onto the Sixers, Benny Simmons, 20 points, 6 rebounds, 4 assists on 64% shooting. His free throws weren't good, just 2 of 5, but there's some pretty good numbers from Simo. While Bob Cub had 19-7 with 5 triples and 5 steals, exactly what we want from Covington. The threes, the steals, get us those rebounds as a bonus. Joel Embiid was out for this game, and then he was upgraded to probable, and then he was downgraded to out. So a whole, and when there's injuries in Philadelphia, it's always a weird series of events. It never fails to be confusing. I don't know why I don't know why they upgraded him to probable. I guess during the warm-up, his back stiffened up a little bit. They play again on Saturday, so we'll see how that goes. Amir Johnson started. He had 12-4-3 in 21 minutes, while Rashawn Holmes had a decent game, 15-7, a steal and a block. But we know that when Embiid plays, then you're going to have Holmes, you're going to have Johnson, and you're going to have Trevor Booker fighting out for those backup minutes behind Šarić and Embiid, and it's not going to be enough for those guys to be relied upon in any sort of 12-team format. Booker had his 15 minutes. That's probably going to be his usual sort of amount. And then I think you could see, you know, maybe 10 minutes for Amir and maybe 10 minutes for Holmes. And that could vary. You might see Amir actually out of the rotation, but it's not going to be enough for Holmesy to be a must-own guy. But while Embiid is out, you hold him and then you see what happens after that. The Boston Celtics and the New York Knicks, just a really horrible loss from the Celtics. Kyrie had 32, 3-4 with 6 triples. Another good game from him. While Marcus Smart didn't hit his shots, but had his 3 assists, had his 4 steals. This is coming off the back of a few good shooting games from Smart. I still think that he should be owned in most leagues. Now, whether it's your team or not, that really does depend on how your team looks. Jason Tatum played through his dislocated finger, only went 2 of 6 from 3, so just bringing down that 3-point percentage, trying to hashtag save the beard. 17-3 with 2 steals. He looked really awesome out there. Look, he looks so comfortable, so relaxed when he's on the court. Yeah, he's fun to watch, and he's, of course, a must-own guy. Al Horford, 10-6-5. There was no Jaylen Brown, who's dealing with a sore Achilles. Hopefully that doesn't keep him out for too much longer. That meant that that Smart started. There was also no Shane Larkin, so we got more minutes for Semi Ojeleye. We've got Abdul Nadir in there as well, having 12 minutes with 6 points and 2 triples. On to the Knicks. Because Porzingis was struggling, Mick Beasley came in and he just went bananas. 32 points for Bees in 25 minutes with 12 rebounds on 65% shooting. So I've gotten the question, do we add Beasley? And the answer to that in standard leagues is no. Yes, he's had big games with Porzingis out. Porzingis is back. Porzingis is not going to play 23 minutes a night from here on out. Beasley will go back and play a 15 to 17 minute a night role, and he's not going to come out with a usage of 49.5%. That is not going to happen. That's not going to happen. He's not going to shoot 65%. He's not going to play 25 minutes. So all of those things are things that won't happen. So therefore, no. He's a deeper league sort of a guy, but whenever Porzingis is out, then we look to use Beasley in that situation. Courtney Lee bounced back after a poor performance in the last one, 12-4 with 2 steals, while Enes Kanter loves playing against Boston, a double-double, 14-10 there for him. Frankie Ntilikina looked really, really good on the court. Loved his defense. 25 minutes as opposed to 23 minutes for Jack. 8 points, 2 steals, 2 triples. I do think at some point he's going to be playing 30 a night. I don't know when that's going to be. I just want Hornacek to play him with Porzingis more. But I like what Ntilikina can do even now for assists in general. Only had 1 in this game, but in general, he can get those assists. And he almost gets those steals as easy as anyone in the league. He just racks them up. The next game, the Memphis Grizzlies and the Phoenix Suns. Marc Gasol, 13-11-5 with 3 blocks. A horrific shooting night from Gasol, only 32% on 19 attempts, while Tyreek had 23-9-5. And not much else to really report from the Grizzlies. Andy Harrison saw his minutes jump back up, 34. He had 12-5, while Mario Chalmers was way down. And I guess that's part because Harrison jumped up, and we also saw some Kobe Simmons, who played 9 minutes. And a lot of the Grizzlies people I follow on Twitter, they were all calling for Simmons to take all of Chalmers' minutes. Chalmers has not been good this season at all. It's always going to be a risk, a guy that hasn't played in over a year, who is over 30 and recovering from an Achilles. It was always going to be a tough situation. They didn't necessarily need to keep him. He's on a non-guaranteed deal. He could go at any point, and he has very limited fantasy value. Chandler Parsons returned, only 17 minutes for Parsons, 4-1-1. I still have confidence that at some point this season he will be a 12-team league guy. It obviously wasn't in this one. Brandon Wright returned, 8-4 in 20 minutes, but Jarrell Martin and Deontay Davis both still played, and that meant that Jermichael Green only saw 27 minutes. Now, he had a double-double, 12-10, but I don't love Green for 10-team leagues. I think he's a borderline low-upside 12-team league guy. He's okay, but he's not spectacular. Gets no defensive numbers, really. He's just not a high-volume guy. I just don't see it for him being a must-own sort of player. On to the Suns.
As Greg runs in, we realise this could get dangerous.
So Greg Monroe had been a DNP CD for 3 consecutive games. Tyson Chandler on the second game of a back-to-back was out to rest, so Monroe got the start and then played 27 minutes and had 8, 12 and 7. We know that Monroe is good. There's no confusion with that. We know he can put up numbers. But with the Suns pretty much showing their hand and saying, well, we are keeping Isaiah Cannon around, somebody is going to go, and most likely there could be a buyout for Monroe. And then the question is, do I stash Monroe in case of a buyout and he goes somewhere? But where does he go where he plays 26 a night? That's the question you've got to try and ask. Like, what team is going to sign him to play 26 a night? I don't think there's any that are out there. You could say the Nets, but why would they bring him on to do that when they just traded for Okafor. I just don't see any purpose in them bringing him along. Maybe the Lakers do with the Brook Lopez injury, but given the way that Walton's using that rotation, I don't know. I just don't really see any great situation. If he's staying in Phoenix, there's no point in owning him if he's going to play, you know, only on the second half of back-to-backs when Chandler sits. As for Alex Len, who'd been putting up good numbers previously, you know, two strong games in a row, and then the last two games, weirdly limited. I don't understand what Triano is doing, and that's something I should make as a soundbite and just drop that in every show that I talk about the Suns. I don't understand what he's doing. Len has the most 12-team value of Munro, Chandler, and himself, but it's just gonna fluctuate. And I can say the same for the point guards. Ulis played 24 minutes. Mike James was a DNP CD, while Isaiah Cannon had 24 minutes and had 10, 3, and 4 with two steals. They're nice numbers for Cannon, but when Booker returns, are they going to keep playing Cannon and Ulis? Are they going to, you know, jerk them around? I think they will. I think those minutes will continue to change, and it's going to be hard to rely upon Cannon or Ulis, and definitely not James, as 12-team standard league sort of players. Troy Daniels hit the game winner against his former team. He hit three threes, an excellent three-point streamer until Devin Booker returns. Dragan Bender, 32 minutes, doesn't put up fantasy stats, so you could ignore him in most formats. But Marquese Chris, I thought maybe he turned the corner last game. Turns out no. 2-3 in 16 minutes for Chrissy. Just piss poor once again from him, and that's basically the title of his autobiography. The last game of the night, the Spurs and the Jazz back-to-back for both of these teams. The Spurs, they had Kawhi back, they had Tone Parker back, but as I mentioned yesterday, Manu was out, Pau Gasol was out, and Dan Green were all out on that second half of the back-to-back. Kawhi played 19 minutes and had 10-5, two steals and a block, and actually played into the second half and looked pretty good out there. And once he gets those minutes back, he's going to be the same old Kawhi. The troubling thing, I guess, here is the play of LaMarcus Aldridge, 11-6 in 28 minutes for Aldridge, a steal and a block, but just didn't get the touches, wasn't efficient, and I do think that there is going to be a significant dip, or at least a dip, with Aldridge over the coming months or so. With Leonard back, he's just not going to be able to dominate the shot count as much as what he was beforehand. Now, he took the most shots in this game, along with Joffrey Laverne, weirdly. But I just don't think that him and Kawhi mesh as well as what he did when he was there on his own. Tone Parker, 29 minutes, which is weird. He was only playing like 24, 25 minutes a night last year. To see him get back to 29 minutes was a weird thing. 11 points with 6 assists. Not really a 12-team league guy, but he looked really strong out there. While Joffrey Laverne, 11-6 in his start for Pau Gasol. Rudy Gay, fewer minutes than Kyle Anderson again. I don't know if that's going to necessarily be a continuing theme. I would guess it was for all the reasons that I outlined yesterday. So if you, for some reason, you are still holding on to Rudy Gay in any 12-team leagues, I don't think that you are, I don't think that you should be doing that in any of those leagues. I just don't see the, I don't see the upside in Gay if he's going to be that third string player behind Anderson and behind Leonard. Onto the Jazz, ravishing Rick Rubio, 38 minutes, 11-11-7. Pretty good if that's what you would, if you still held on to him, which you should. But we have to remember that the Donovan Mitchell was out of this game, enabling Rubio to get those extra minutes. Now, when Mitchell returns, I think Rubio goes back to under 30, especially with how well Rocket Rodney Hood is playing and how much Mitchell had been playing at point guard before that. So savor this. If you can trade, trade, but I wouldn't be dropping or anything like that, and let's see how it goes. But it was definitely a positive sign from Rick. As for Rocket, 29 points with 3 triples. He should be owned in all 12s and most 10s, while Alec Burks saw 21 minutes, had 12-3, but he's going to be a big loser when the Don returns as well, so don't get overly excited based on that. The Jazz did change up their starters. They moved Joe Johnson back to the bench and put Jonas Jerebko in there next to Derek Favors. 9-3 with a 1-1 for Jerebko. That's good for the deeper league sort of people. Well, Joe Johnson had 10-4, but he's just not the same guy anymore. I'm pretty sure most of you would be aware of that. Bit of a stinker from Jingle and Joe as well. 6-5-5 on only 4 shot attempts, but I do believe that he should remain owned in all standard leagues. That does it for all of Thursday's action. I'm going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back ready to go to talk about the action for Friday, where there are 9 games on. And I'm going to put a song on by Visca, and the song is called... What's it called? It's called Let Go. So, let go. We're back. Let's talk DFS. On Thursday, the perfect lineups on FanDuel. Kyrie, 43.6. The Cannonball with 24.6. DeMar DeRozan, 62.5. And Rocket Rodney Hood, 34.6. The Hammer, Denzel Valentine, 35. LeBron James at 59.7. Šarić had 52.5. Mick Beasley had 42.9. And Jakob Poeltl had 26.2 for a total of 381.6. And that cost $59,700. On DraftKings, Kyrie 46.25, the Hammer had 35.75, Rocket had 35.75 as well, while Beasley had 48, Greggy Munro 32, DeMar DeRozan 63.75, Bob Cove had 40.25, and Šarić had 52.5 for a total of 354.25, and that costs the full $50,000 dues. All right, let's move on to these games to talk some DFS for Friday's action. All right, that first game we're going to talk about is the New Orleans Pelicans and the Orlando Magic. For the Magic, Aaron Gordon is out, Evan Fournier is doubtful, while John Isaac is questionable after hurting his ankle again. I would imagine that Isaac will be out again. That's going to give more minutes here to Mario Hezonja, perhaps Weza Wundu, DJ Augustin, and Shelvin Mack are all going to get somewhat of a boost. Let's start with those point guards. Augustine's at 4,100. He had 22 points in 28 minutes in the last game without Fournier around and perhaps without Isaac. He's going to have an opportunity to do that again. I don't think he's a super safe play, but there is some value there. Well, Lord Alfred Payton's at 6,900 and really repaid that in that last game against the Bulls, as he was always likely to do. Against the Pelicans, it's not so easy of a matchup. So at that salary, I think that Payton is a fade. As for Rajon Rondo on the Pelicans, 6,300. He had 5 points in his last game. So yeah, he's not going to be a standard fixture in my lineups. 3,600 for Shelvin Mack. Only 11 points, but 18 minutes in that last game. So I guess if we see all of these guys ruled out, like Fournier and Isaac, you could consider Mack, especially if they decide to go with him in a starting role at 3,600. There is some value there. He could give you a 27 or 30 point guy, but I think the likelihood of that's pretty low. At shooting guard, Drew Holiday's at 7,800. Just a really, really strong matchup for Drew here. But at that price, I don't feel good in cash. Now, he's got 50, 60 point upside here easily, but I think his floor's a little bit too low at that sort of salary. So probably a GPP only guy. Etuan Moore's at 48, as well as Moore has been playing this season. I don't believe that he is a great DFS option here. I think his ceiling's pretty limited. At small forward, John Simmons at 6,500. Hasn't quite been where he needs to be the last couple, but over his last five, averaging 35. And if we're going to assume that Fournier is going to join Gordon on the sidelines, I think he's a pretty strong cash play here. Mario Hezonja is at 4,400. Only 14 points in that last game. Gordon is still out though, so I'd be happy to get back on him and hope we see 30 minutes out of him, especially if Isaac is out. That really does boost the value of Hezonja here, as he will likely get 30 minutes as the starting power forward. Awundu, Cunningham, nothing much to see. At power forward, Tone Davis is at 11,300.
Me, Tone, charged. Totally charged, Tone.
Totally charged, Tone.
Spot on.
It's a great situation for Tone Davis here. I think that you can almost lock in a 50 for him with a 60-65 point upside. So I do like him quite a bit. At center, Nick Vucevic, 9,900. Vucevic has been putting up good numbers. Too high of a price. Bad matchup for him. So he is someone who I would fade in this situation. While Boog is at 11,000. Very similar to using Tone Davis. Yeah, Boog's got that 60 point upside here with probably a 45 point floor. So if I'm going to take one of them, I'd probably take Tone Davis. But Boog is also a pretty good option in this one. If you're using Bismack Biyombo in DFS, probably should give DFS away, I reckon. Let's have a look at this one on DraftKings. I like Holiday again for a tournament here, 7,300. Yeah, it really does have that 60-point upside, but the floor probably a little bit too low. But it's 7,300. I like it more cashy on DraftKings, still probably just tournaments. Lord Alfred Payton, such a big price difference. 5,600 for him on DraftKings makes him a cash option. Really, really like that. DJ Augustin at 38, also a pretty good cash play with those absences, while Boog Cousins at 11-1 and Tone Davis at 10-5 both have value, as they do pretty much most nights, but this is a pretty decent spot for them to go off and put up some decent-sized numbers. Let's go to the next game. We've got the New York Knicks and the Detroit Pistons. The Knicks, the only team on a back-to-back on this Friday. We assume that Porzingis will be fine to go. You know, he said the knee wasn't bothering him today, so that's good news in that regard. The performance wasn't good, obviously. at point guard. Ish Smith's at 4,400. He's been almost splitting minutes with Reggie Jackson lately, but it hasn't really translated into great numbers. He hasn't been playing all that well. It's just that Jackson's been playing poor. I'd probably leave both Jackson and Smith alone, but they do have a really good matchup. So if I'm going to take one, it's going to be a tournament play only, and it would be Reggie Jackson, who does have that 35-point upside, whereas I'm not really sure that Smith has that level. Frankie Ntilikina is at 4,400. Another decent performance from Frank today. He can come out there, get you three steals, have seven assists, and that's almost enough value. Not quite, but almost there. He hit some nice threes in today's game against Boston. So I do think that he has some tournament upside here, but not really for cash at that price. Jarrett Jack, Langston Galloway, Langston Galloway revenge game. At shooting guard, there is just nothing here. Now, I don't know if the Pistons will go back and start Luke Kennard, if they'll put Reggie Bullock there and start Tone Tolliver, but regardless, I'm not looking at Kennard as an option. At small forward, Reggie Bullock's at 4,100, and he had 5.5 in the last game, which is obviously horrible because he wasn't able to continue shooting at 60%. Who knew? He's still worth a look here because I think he's going to get decent minutes, at least 24 to 25, maybe up to 30, and that can be useful. So he is a tournament guy, but not a super strong one and definitely not a cash reliable player. Same with Doug McDirt and Stan Johnson. I'm not interested in either of those guys. I like Courtney Lee at 5,600 for cash and a nice bounce back performance from Courtney today. At power forward, Toby Harris at 6,500 has done very well against the Knicks, but his recent form has been poor, so I'm not really feeling using him. Tone Tolliver's at 37, happily jumping upon him in a GPP, 22 points in that last one, played 30 minutes. If we hear that he is starting, then I would be definitely okay, even in cash, using him to enable you to put some of those higher priced Westbrooks and Jim Hardens and those sort of guys into lineups. As for Porzingis at 9,500, he was always destined to struggle against Boston. He does struggle against them. He does very well against Detroit, but I'm not sure at 9,500 he's a guy that I want to lock into cash. I would use him as a GPP guy, but not a cash player at this stage. Mick Beasley's at 6,300, so somehow beat his value today by putting up that monster performance. But the likelihood of that happening again, as I detailed earlier, is pretty much zero. So that's not of any interest. At center, Drummond's at 9,100. He's got a really good opportunity here against the Knicks and Enes Kanter, but I'm still not feeling comfortable with his floor, so it's a tournament type of situation. While Kanter's at 6,300, probably end up fading him at that sort of a salary. On DraftKings, Frank at 4,000. I do like the tournament upside for Ntilikina there. That's 35-point upside. That's worth a look. Drummond at 8,600 is also a pretty strong tournament play. But again, nothing much I really like for cash here. You could look at Porzingis at 8,400. But I'm just not really dialing into that at that sort of a salary. Toby Harris is down to 6,000. So there's a marginal level of upside there. But overall, it's not the greatest looking DFS game at this point. And with eight others on the slate, you're better off looking at those ones. At Washington at Brooklyn. The Wizards favored by 5, and the total is 212. We need to know the status of Otto Porter. If he is out, that's more minutes for Kelly Oubre, more minutes for Tomas Satoransky, potentially more for Jody Meeks as well. But none of those guys, aside from Oubre, is really worth spending too much on for DFS. At point guard, Spencer Dinwiddie is at $7,000. His salary continues to come down because his performances, while they've been decent on the court, they haven't been really racking up the DFS numbers. So at $7,000, he's probably just a little bit too high. Whereas John Wall's at $9,500. We saw decent minutes from him in the last one, 33 of them, had 38 points. He has in the past eviscerated Brooklyn. So I am in on him. It's a great, great matchup. I think it's it's a very good tournament play, and it actually does have some cash availability or viability. Wouldn't be my lock guy to put in cash, but he does have some of that value. Satoransky's at minimum salary, 23 points for him in the last one. So I said, yeah, there's not going to be much to see, but if Porter's out and he's going to get minutes at the three as well as at backup point guard at minimum salary, I think that Satoransky could have some sneaky cash value as long as Otto Porter is out. Caris LeVert's at 5,900 has been solid, but not that solid. So I think his upside's limited and his floor is low. So that's not really looking at that. Brattles Beal's at 8,400. We love what Brattles has been doing. 42 points over his last five with a lower score of just 35. That makes him a fairly strong cash play. Some of that with John, some of that without John. So I think that he is a fairly decent cash option here. At small forward, the Blue Swimmers at 4,900. I've got no idea why he's so highly priced. I want nothing to do with him. While Damari Carroll at 5,700. He had 30 in 25 minutes in the last game. Obviously a good performance there. His performances prior to that had been a little bit flaky. But I don't mind him here at 57. I think it's not a bad spot with that 30-point upside. As for Porter at 67, I won't be going there, while Kelly Oubre at 44. If Porter is out, that's a tournament play, but nothing more. He hasn't really done much in those couple of starts with Porter out. At power forward, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson has come down now to 6,800, and that does give him a level of appeal, but I still do think it's probably just a little bit too high. But in the last five games, he's had a 52-point game. 52 points at 6,800. If you can repeat that, that's obviously great. But I don't feel super confident about his floor. So not a cash guy, more of a tournament player. Markeith, don't want anything to do with him. While at center, we've got Jarrett Allen. We've got Tyler Zeller, both minimum salary players for Brooklyn. Absolutely nothing that I'm interested in there. While Marcin Gortat had 38 in the last game, he's at 4,500. But can he be limited by Allen, by Zeller in this one? Or is there an opportunity? I think there's an opportunity. I wouldn't feel good about him in cash. He plays 29. He plays 24. It does go up and down. But if Porter's out, it means we probably see less Markeith at the 5. And that can open up some more minutes for Gortat. So if Otto is out, 4,500 for Gortat. It could actually be used as a cash play. And for me to say that about Gortat, when I'm not a massive fan of what he's doing at the moment, is something. On DraftKings, very similar, but I love Damari Carroll more on DraftKings. 4,800 is a ridiculously low price, and I think that with that 30-point upside, he is absolutely someone you should be looking at, whereas Spencer Dinwiddie, also more interested in him on DraftKings, 6,400. I think that's a very, very attainable price tag. Even though the matchup is a negative, I do think that he can exceed 30 points after a couple of down performances. Johnny Walls at 87, so I'm not loving that. I don't hate it. But I'm not loving it. More of a tournament. While Beal at 75 is a strong cash play over on DraftKings as well. Let's go on to the next game. We're going to look at the Atlanta Hawks. They are taking on the Oklahoma City Thunder. Where are we for that one? The Dennis Schroeder is dealing with an ankle sprain, so obviously that's very important. If he is out, we're going to have Malcolm Delaney and we're going to have Isaiah Taylor. Now, in the last two games, one of them it was Taylor playing the bulk of the minutes, one of them it was Delaney, so I don't really know which way Budenholzer is going to go. The last game it had been Taylor, and for almost the previous 10, 15 games before that, but there was that one random Delaney game snuck in there that makes you just doubt yourself a little bit. So if Schroeder is out, you could create tournament lineups, one with Delaney, one with Taylor, but with neither of them being cash locks, because we just don't know how those minutes would be split in that situation. At point guard here, Schroeder's at 7,300. I don't think it's a great spot for him anyway, even if he did play, so he'd be a fade. As for Russell Westbrook, 11,500, really, really strong option for Westy here, averaging 58 over the last five. Of his last three against the Hawks, he averages 63. I got no problem. He's just been really going full, I don't want to say ball hog, but full ball hog mode. Russ, like just taking all the shots, getting all the stats. Everything's up for him recently, and it's a great matchup. So I am in on him as a cash option. At shooting guard, Kent Bazemore. Love what Bazemore's been doing lately. 5,800 for him. I think that's almost a lock for cash. Somehow his salary has come down by $500, making it way more appealing. So I am in on him. Ballinelli, Robertson, Abrines, no. At small forward, Paulie George is up to 8,400 because he had a decent game in the last one, 36 points. But that's not enough for me to feel good about him in cash. He's too streaky. The shooting's not great. He's more of a tournament player. While the artist formerly known as Taurean Prince is at 5,300. Terrible in the last game, but I don't care. At 5,300, he is a cash guy to have a look at because he can do it in other areas, rebounds, steals. And if he gets those 30-plus minutes, which I think he will, then he should be able to get that value relatively comfortably. At power forward, the Baptist, John Collins is at $6,000. While I like what Collins can do, and if he's going to get 27 minutes, he's going to exceed 25 points. He's a point-per-minute beast, at least a point-per-minute, probably even more. But at 6,000, it's probably on the upper limit of what I'd pay. I'm not sure the upside's there for tournaments, and I could consider him for cash, but there are going to be better options, whereas Ersan Ilyasova at 4,900, I can't use him there. He's averaging 19 points over the last five. He requires those super hot shooting nights, which just don't happen often enough. So maybe in a tournament, you could do it with Ersan, but I don't feel good with the Baptist back. At Well, we got Mallow, who is also a power forward and also bad. $6,600 for Mallow is too expensive. Someone tried to tell me today on Twitter that Carmelo Anthony is a top 10 player in the NBA. Today, December the 22nd, they told me that Carmelo Anthony is a top 10 player in the NBA. And I didn't even know what to say to that, to be honest. That was something. Jeremy Grant's at 41. No. At center, Steve-O Adams, $6,600. I love the matchup for Adams here, but is that just too high of a price? I think it might be marginally too high, but I actually don't despise it, given the way some of the other pricing is on FanDuel. I think that, yeah, he only played 26 minutes in that first game back from concussion, that blowout of the Jazz. Still put up 25 points. If he gets to 30 points here, or 30 minutes, he should be able to get 30 points. And at 6,600, that's not a bad result. Plus, he's got the ability to go way higher than that. So I actually think that he is not a bad option. Miles Plumlee is a bad option. Let's move on to DraftKings now. I like for tournaments, Mallow on DraftKings is a different story. 5,600, really like that. I could even consider that potentially a cash play at that sort of a low price. It is such a big difference to where he is on FanDuel, but probably more of a tournament guy. Well, Paulie George at 71, that's a definite tournament play, and probably I feel okay about using him in cash at 7,100. For the cash guys, the Baptist at 5,000, love that. That is one of my DraftKings type locks at 5,000. I feel that his floor is easily going to make that back. While Westbrook at 11.4 is also super strong, as I highlighted earlier. Let's go to the next game. We're going to talk about the Dallas Mavericks and the Miami Heat. Where are we with that one? Here we go. Injury-wise, Justice Winslow is questionable. The iron shoulder, Goran Dragic, is also questionable. So obviously, if both of those guys are out, it's going to open up minutes in the front court. If Winslow's out, we're going to have more Bam Adebayo, more Jordy Mickey, more Kelly Olynyk. And if Dragic is out, you're going to have more Joshy Richardson, more Deion Waiters, and more Tyler Johnson. So there is going to be some value really, really open up if both of those guys happen to be out. Now, if Dragic plays, he's at 6,100. He hasn't been great this year, and I wouldn't feel good about using him in cash. But as a tournament play, there is a level of upside. Still not going to be one of my picks to use in the majority of lineups. JJ Barea at 4,800. With Dennis Smith back, it is a little bit harder to rely on JJ. Still at 27 in the last game, thankfully, or thanks to his large assist total. But I don't really feel great about him with Smith back. As for Smith, 5,300. I actually think it's all right. I would be looking to use him as a tournament play. Had 27 or 28 in the first game back, made value, and I think he's going to have that opportunity again here. As for Tyler Johnson, up to 6,000. So there's no chance we're using that if the iron shoulder plays, but if he is out, then Johnson at 6,000, I think is a pretty strong cash play, assuming that Dragic is out. At shooting guard, Wes Matthews, I just don't like what he does. Not really high upside enough and definitely too low of a floor. Deion Waiters at 57, wouldn't even consider that unless the iron shoulder is out and then he comes in. Devin Harris, the Duke, Wayne Ellington, not much for me to say. Oh, the Duke, maybe if Dragic is out, he's going to play 30 minutes and he's got that ability to hit 6-7 threes, which could really get those numbers up. So he's a tournament sort of a guy. At 4,300, Justice Winslow, given that Jimmy Johnson's out, Justice could start, but he doesn't rack up enough numbers for me to really care, so he's a fade. The pencil, Harrison Barnes, is at 6,600. I think that's a fine cash play, whereas Joshy Richardson's now up to $6,000 because he's been killing it. He's averaging 36 over his last five. If Dragic is out, I think that is a good cash play. If Dragic is in, I'd probably look at Joshy more as a GPP guy at that sort of a salary. If he was down at 5,500, I'd look at him at cash regardless, but because it's up to 6,000, probably someone who I would fade. At power forward, Kelly Olynyk dropped 45 on the Celtics, and he is now, as a result, at 6,800. And that makes it really, really tough to use Olynyk. Now, yes, he's averaging 37 over the last three, but that's an unrealistic expectation for Olynyk, I believe. Jordan Mickey's at 4,200. Tournament, and that's probably about it. At center, Dirk's a power forward as well, of course, but he's at 4,700. I don't really see that. Bam Adebayo at 51. Nope. Salah Mejri, nope. Maxi Kleber, I'm going to say no on Max as well. Let's flick that onto DraftKings and see how that all looks over there. Olynyk at 5,600, a much more manageable price, so I really do like that for tournaments. In fact, I could even consider that a cash option, assuming Justice Winslow's out. Even if Winslow's in, he probably does have that cash value, while I like the pencil a lot in cash. 6,400 for Harrison Barnes is almost a guarantee of 30, which is a strong floor with that 40-point upside. I really do like him there. All those other caveats sort of apply. Dennis Smith at 48, I actually think is really good over on DraftKings too. You've got Joshy Richardson and Tyler Johnson who can gain a lot of value if Dragic is out, especially Johnson at 5,400 and Richardson at 6,100 is probably not quite as good as what we would have hoped for to see his price at. Let's go on to the next one. We have got the LA Clippers and the Houston Rockets. The return of Chris Paul, or the matchup of Chris Paul against his former team, will not be happening. Chris Paul will be out of this one. Clint Capela is listed as doubtful. We already know that Luke Marmute is out, so the Rockets are going to be running a very, very tight seven-man rotation, most likely, unless D'Antoni deviates, which he should, but he probably won't. On the Clippers side of things, we know the Rooster Danilo Gallinari is out for the next 4 or 5 weeks, so we don't have to worry too much there. Wes Johnson's out for the next 3 games, so there is some value opening up there on the Clippers for us to try and take advantage of, which is not necessarily an easy thing to do given the players that are there. The Rockets are favored by a lot, 11.5, and the total is 219 points. At point guard, Milosh is at 5,200 on FanDuel. Hasn't quite been hitting that level. More of a tournament sort of a guy. Doesn't have Chris Paul to worry about defensively, so that's a boost for him there. But we need him to play 30, 32 minutes, which he hasn't been doing. Stuck at 27. We don't know if that's a restriction thing or if it's the way that Doc wants to use him. So he is a little bit hard to rely upon. Austin Rivers at 6,000. I think he's absolutely fine for cash given the way that the Clippers are currently looking. Then you've got a whole bunch of other point guards who might be lottery tickets. Sindarius Thornwell, Demetrius Jackson, Bob Brown, Jawan Evans. Maybe. But I think if you're going to look at any of them, you'd look at Evans. But The Clippers have got Teodosic, they've got Williams, and they've got Rivers back, so it's hard to consider any of those guys to look at. Eric Gordon, though, at 5,400, he's going to start. He's going to handle the ball more, play more backup point guard. Love that. Really, really strong situation. Great matchup. Great opportunity. We know what he did before Chris Paul came back into the lineup. Love Eric Gordon there. And Jim Harden's up to 12,000. Big price jump, but he was killing it when Chris Paul was out, so no reason that he can't go for 60 again here, so I like him quite a bit. Lou Williams down to 6,800. That's getting exciting for me. Hasn't really hit his shots the last couple of games, and then the minutes have been a little bit down, but I'm back on him at 6,800. CJ Williams, who's been starting, he does not get many points. The minutes are all right, but nothing really major to see with him. At small forward, PJ Tucker, I just don't really think there's much upside in him. He's going to get a lot of minutes, so maybe you could consider a 4,600 PJ Tucker as a cash play. I probably wouldn't, though. Trevor Reza at cash, he's going to get 50 minutes, probably. 6,100 for Trevor. He had 49 in the last game in 45 minutes. I think that him getting 30 almost feels as close to guarantee-ish as you can get. Sammy Decker's at minimum salary. With the Rooster out, with Wes Johnson out, there is an opportunity, but it's being spread between him, Jamil Wilson, the table, Montrezl Harrell, so it's hard to rely upon him solely and a little bit tough there. Ryan Anderson at 4,200, the minutes are really appealing, the production is horrendous, you only use him in a tournament, and even then, that's probably going to be a no from me. Whereas Harrell at 36 or Jamil Wilson at 37, I could take either of those guys, they could easily get you 20 to 23 points. And that's not bad at that salary. So they could be both usable in cash to get some of these higher priced, Jim Harden's in or your Westbrook's in as well by putting a Wilson or a Harrell. In fact, I'd probably feel more comfortable putting in Wilson because I know he's going to start and play 25 minutes and probably get me those at least 15 points, which is not a bad return at that sort of a salary. At center, Nene, 3,700. He played 26 minutes in the last one, only 15 points, but normally Nene is a much better producer than that, so I'm fine with using him in cash, even if it just is 22 or 23 points. It's definitely enough at that salary, while DeAndre Jordan at 8,200 hasn't quite been at that right spot or the right level of production for that salary, but it's not a bad matchup for him. It's not a great one, but it's not a bad one. But given some of the other options around, he's probably not going to be a guy that I'd look to prioritize in a lineup. On DraftKings, Harden at 11.5 I like for both sorts of games. Same with Eric Gordon at 59. Trevor Ariza at 55 is super, absolutely fantastic for cash. And there's a bit of tournament upside there. And Nene at 37, real strong also. I don't like Lou Williams as much here at 7,200. Probably just a little bit too highly priced over on DraftKings. Whereas the 5,600 for Austin Rivers, I feel like that is a really, really strong cash option. Let's move on to this next game we're going to talk about. It is the Charlotte Hornets and the Milwaukee Bucks. We've got the Bucks favored by 5 and the total is 211.5. Trevion Graham is questionable with back spasms. If he is out, it gives more minutes to Malik Monk and to Johnny O'Brien. So keep an eye on, but probably more O'Brien, but he's not going to be a massive DFS guy. Michael Carter-Williams and Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, both of the Michael hyphens are listed as probable, so we assume they are going to play. At point guard, Eric Bledsoe, 7,200. In on him, I think we think we're getting 35 out of him. That's a decent bet, so I like him a lot in this matchup. On the other side of it, you've got Kemba at 7,200, so the same price. Kemba has been a little bit disappointing in his recent performances, and there is a little bit of blowout potential in this game, and Eric Bledsoe is a superior defender than what Kemba Walker is, so matching those two up, I take Bledsoe over Kemba. Carter Williams, Dellavedova, I don't know if Dally's going to start, who knows what sort. What's Kidd going to do to make us laugh in this game? Well, there's going to be something because it almost never fails. At shooting guard, Brogo's at 4,900. He's been getting okay minutes, but I cannot put any trust in what he's going to do playing time-wise. Will he start? Will Tone Snell start? Who's going to get the minutes? It is completely up in the air. Literally, Jason Kidd doesn't know at this point, and he won't know any idea of what the rotation pattern is until the game's finished, and then he'll make up an answer if someone questions him about it. Don't think we'll be looking at him at 4,900. Jez Lambs at 5,700 had 41 in that last game. Now, it was not a usual sort of performance with Kidd-Gilchrist sitting out due to that shoulder issue for some of that game. I think at 5,700, that's quite a high price for Lamb when he's most likely going to be at 25 minutes or so, maybe a little bit more. I wouldn't feel great about using him. Batum's at 6, probably not. And Middleton's at 7,700. Just probably a little bit high, but I don't dislike Middleton here. He does have that 45-point upside with probably a 35-point floor, which is okay. So you could use him in cash, but there are better options around. The small forwards, Yanni is at 12,000. Harden, Westbrook are superior options to me on this slate. Now, we know that Yanni is really, really good, obviously, but both of those other guys are in more favorable situations, so I'd probably end up fading Yanni, maybe put him into a GPP. At power forward, the Muppet, John Henson, 5,500. He had 33 in the last game. I think he's been decent enough to consider as a cash option, even though the matchup with Dwight can be troubling. While 3,900 for Kaminsky, Frank the Tank, I don't feel good. Dwighty Howard, 8,300. Centers against the Bucks have been pretty strong this year. Howard has been good, but only 30-point average over the last three, 36 over the last five. I don't dislike it, but I don't like it. He's not going to be a prime sort of target to me. And of course, we are not looking at Thon McCur. The DraftKings situation is a lot of value. It's Han here on DraftKings, to be honest. 4,400 for the Muppet, John Henson, is fantastic. Bledsoe at 67, I love, and Kemba at 68. Both of those guys can be used. Those prices are really strong. And Dwight Howard on DraftKings, love it. 7,600, double-double bonus. This is a 50-point upside type of situation for Dwight here. And at 7,600, I think it's hard to ignore. While Yanni at 11.3 is also a much stronger cash option on DraftKings than what he is on FanDuel. Just the discrepancy between the two sites is important. Let's go on to the next one. We've got the Denver Nuggets and the Portland Trailblazers. Damian Lillard is out with a hamstring strain. I think that Lillard is going to miss time. And I found something interesting today. Like, Damian Lillard's always talked about as an Iron Man because he didn't miss a game for his first 3 years. But he missed, he's missed seven games each of the past two seasons. At what point do we start, calling people not Iron Man who have been injured? The Iron Man tag or the durable tag, it tends to stick for players for much longer than it would for others. And weirdly enough, even more weird about Damian Lillard, is he's been injured the last three seasons. In 2015-16, his first game missed was the 21st of December. In 2016-17, his first game missed was the 26th of December. And this season, his first game missed is going to be the 22nd of December. So weirdly, his injuries have all happened at exactly the same time, Christmas. He's been injured at Christmas for the last three seasons. That is really bizarre. There's definitely nothing in it. It's just really bizarre when I went back to look at his injury history. These injuries all happened at exactly the same time. Really weird scenario. Now, with him out, CJ McCollum is going to have a huge boost, and Shabazz Napier could start. Even if he doesn't start, he's going to have a bigger role. Could be Pat Connaughton who starts next to CJ as CJ moves over to point guard. But there is a ton of value in this game, and this is what you should be attacking. Shabazz at 3,700, bang, love it. Even if he doesn't start, a lot of minutes are going to be coming his way, I would believe. At least 25, yeah, probably up to 30 there for Shabazz. The blue arrow on the other side of things, 6,400 for Jamal Murray. Easily could do it. We just don't know what Mike Malone, the doctor, is going to throw out there. So I think he's more of a tournament guy, especially at that price. But he's coming off a strong, strong performance. Yeah, 36 average over his last five is really good for the blue arrow. At shooting guard, McCollum's at 6,900. He has an opportunity here for a 50. Probably 42, 43 is a realistic expectation for CJ. So I do really, really like having him into lineups. Gaz Harris, we don't know if he is going to play.
Nice, Gary!
He's at 6,500, so it's hard to use him in any cash lumps. But the other guy you want to look at is Pat Connaughton. Minimum salary, a chance to start next to McCollum, and a chance to knock in some threes. Now, his upside's not as high as Napier's, I don't believe, but he is a guy that you can consider. Farton, Will Barton at 6,500, probably a little bit too high given the way that the Nuggets are currently using Baby Neck and Torrey Craig, so that makes him a tougher guy to use. At small forward, Evan Turner, a lot of minutes for Evan, and he's going to have some extra ball handling responsibilities as well. At 4,500 on FanDuel, he's probably a little bit too high, but I think he does have some 25 to 27 point upside, and he's definitely in as good a situation as what he's been in recently. Torrey Craig's at 4,000. He's been getting around that number. Now, 21 average over the last three games in 28 minutes per game. That's sort of where it needs to be. So I think his upside is really limited, but I do think he could be an okay cash guy. Again, one of those low price buffers to get some high price players in. As for Chandler, 4,700. Baby Neck is a GPP guy. A power forward, Al-Farouq Aminu, is at 5,700. He is way too flaky for me to consider as a cash option. I don't really love the matchup, so I don't think I'd be using him. Whereas Trey Lyles at 4,400, I'm in on that. I think that's for cash. I think there's upside for a 30-pointer. I do really like that. Now, I do imagine that we are going to see, if Gaz Harris returns, we are going to see Mason Plumlee move back to the bench and play as that backup center. Not that that really affects Lyles too much, but I do think that's what's going to go down. At center, Yusuf Nurkic has killed his former team in the past. He's at 6,800, but his minutes have been limited. But I think it's twice he's matched up against Denver. He's averaged 41 points against them. So I like using him, especially at that reduced price. We just hope that he can make it three in a row of big games. As for Nikola Jokic, well, he's really struggled against Yusuf Nurkic. 8,300, so he is a fade to me and a pretty strong fade at that sort of price. You could always throw him into a tournament, but I would not want to use him in any sort of cash lumps. And I do believe Mason Plumlee will probably go back to the bench, so I don't think that at 5,600 he is going to be all that strong. On DraftKings, McCollum at 7,000. I love that for cash. Nurkic at 7,400. Aminu at 47 is a much better play on DraftKings. I can absolutely get behind that. Napier at 4,300 also has value. Evan Turner at 38. Love Evan Turner at 38 on DraftKings. And he can get you 22, 23 here pretty comfortably, I think, with Lillard out. And Torrey Craig at 37 is a very strong cash, but not really a tournament guy. Whereas Jokic at 7,400, love the price, big dip in his salary. But the Nurkic factor would make me say only for GPPs for Nick. The last game of the night, we've got the Lakers and the Golden State Warriors. At this point, Draymond Green is probable. Shawnee Livingston is doubtful when Andre Iguodala and Zaza Pachulia are both questionable. If Iguodala is out, that gives more value to Omri Caspi. If Pachulia is out, then we get more value from Jordy Bell. At point guard, Lonzo Ball, 7,400. He had 36 the last time out against the Warriors. I think he's absolutely worth a GPP look. And in fact, the way he's playing, you could even consider him a cash guy. So I definitely don't hate on Lonzo here. Quinn Cook started the last game for the Warriors, didn't do anything. Pat McCaw got the majority of those minutes, but neither of those guys is putting up huge stats. Now, McCaw, in fairness to him, put up 27 in that last game in 29 minutes, but at 4,300, he'd really only be a tournament sort of a guy to have a look at. Other shooting guards, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope is back after his stint in jail. He'll go back to jail after the game. 5,500, I'm not joking, he's literally in jail. Comes out of jail, ankle bracelet on, and then goes back, plays the game, then goes back to jail. He's at 5,500. I actually really like this for cash for KCP, averaging 31 over the last five. Doesn't have to worry about guarding Steph Curry. on defense, which he's done in the past. I like this one for him out of jail. 7,200 for Clay, more of a tournament guy. He was good in the last game, but previously hadn't really stepped up in Curry's absence. While Jordy Clarkson is really struggling. 18-point average over his last five, 4,300. Backup point guard minutes only at the moment for Clarko. Not feeling much there for him. Josh the Hitman Hart at $4,000. Big game in the last one, 28 points. Whenever KCP is out, he has tremendous value, but KCP's back, so he'll go back to his limited minutes. At small forward, Durant at 11-5. Love it. Just putting up numbers pretty consistently with Curry out, so you feel pretty comfortable getting a 50 out of him. Iguodala's at 4,400. Actually, don't mind him if he plays. He's handling the ball more and might push up to 30, especially if Pachulia's out. Some extra minutes potentially could come his way. Brando Ingram at $7,000 did really well last time against the Warriors. Probably more of a tournament guy. Not feeling super locked in cash, while Caspi, as I mentioned, is a guy to use if Iguodala is out. At power forward, Draymond's at $8,700. I will fade Draymond at that sort of a price. While the future MVP is now up to 6,800. Kyle Kuzma, he had 55 in the last game. Unrealistic to expect that level of production, but I still feel with Brook Lopez out, he's going to play 35 minutes or so and be able to eclipse 35 points. So I think he's absolutely an option here. Jordy Bell, Larry Nance, not much for me to say, but Julius Randle. 6 points in the last game, 8 minutes, 5,100. No one's going to be really on Julius Randle here. It's a perfect opportunity to pivot to him in a GPP. Luke Walton said that the rotation will likely change most games with Lopez out. Doesn't mean that Bogut would start. And this could be a shithouse matchup for Bogut, although they might ceremonially start him. But I think you're going to see more Randle. It's unlikely that Kuzma comes out and hits his first six shots and Corey Brewer comes out and hits whatever he hit and Larry Nance comes out and plays as well. So I think we're going to get bigger minutes from Randle, and this is a great opportunity to pivot towards him. So I do like using him quite a bit here. On DraftKings, Durant at 11.6 is strong. Kuzma, the future MVP at 6,300 is also good. While Randle, the same sort of story, 5,400 as an interesting GPP pivot point. Lonzo Ball at 7,000 is also decently strong, and I think you consider him a cash play. Let's run through the other sites now before we wrap it up. On Yahoo, for tournaments, Russ Westbrook, Johnny Wall, Al-Farouq Aminu, Kelly Olynyk, Ersan Ilyasova, Frankie Ntilikina, and Tone Tolliver. And the cash options, Torrey Craig, Jordan Mickey, Trey Lyles, Wilson Chandler, Evan Turner, Milos Teodosic, the Muppet John Henson, PJ Tucker, Shabazz Napier, Trevor Ariza, CJ McCollum, Dwight Howard, Kevin Durant, and James Harden. On Moneyball for tournaments, Yanni, Paulie George, Drew Holiday, Yusuf Nurkic, Evan Turner, DJ Augustine, Reggie Bullock, Tone Tolliver. And for cash, we've got Torrey Craig, we've got Nene, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Jezza Lamb, Shabazz Napier, Kyle Kuzma, Trevor Ariza, Steve-O Adams, Eric Gordon, CJ McCollum, John Wall, Tone Davis, Russ Westbrook, and Jim Harden. And to wrap up the week, on Draft Stars for tournaments, Dwight, Jokic, Spencer Dinwiddie, Carmelo Anthony, PJ Tucker, Julius Randle, DJ Augustine, Tone Tolliver, Pat Connaughton. And for cash, we've got Torrey Craig, we've got Evan Turner, Nene, Shabazz Napier, The Baptist, Steve-O Adams, Trev Ariza, Aminu, Hollis Jefferson, Yusuf Nurkic, CJ McCollum, John Wall, Tone Davis, and Jim Harden. Don't forget, actually, it's Christmas coming up. So I will wish all of you who celebrate Christmas a Merry Christmas, a Happy Holidays to all of you who don't celebrate Christmas. I hope you guys enjoy the time with family, enjoy everything that's going on at this time of the year. Now, a quick programming note, of course, there won't be any show over the weekend. There also won't be a show for Christmas Day, because that will be my Christmas Day here, so I'm going to take Christmas Day off. So there'll only be four shows next week. I do apologize for that, but there won't be a Christmas Day show. But back in business, straight after that, on to Boxing Day. If you do listen to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, please leave a 5-star review. You can also find it on Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, and on Spotify, and on YouTube, where you can leave a thumbs up, you can subscribe, and you can leave a comment. Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Ish Smith.